be with you again tonight. Glad that you're here. I'd encourage you to take your Bibles this evening and open to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter tonight, is where we're going to be spending our time. I went a bit longer than I normally do this morning, and so those that have come back tonight, you're going to get a bit of a reprieve because this will be a bit shorter than it was this morning. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, you know, but that's okay, because this morning we were talking about a big subject. I mean, we were talking about the whole Bible. And so that it ought to take a whole lot longer time than talking about maybe just one chapter. So in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, if you'll begin reading with me at verse 1, we want to consider what Solomon is saying. You know, everybody has some thought. You know, we grow up, we have our childhood, and then we grow up and we come out into the real world, and we learn that childhood's not the real world, that there are other things that go on, and sometimes it's unpleasant, and we grow older, and we see our children, our grandchildren coming up afterwards, and you know, we want to pass on some kind of information to them, some kind of wisdom, something that we've learned in our time here on earth. Everybody wants to do that, don't we? There's at least a fair number of folks that do. And Solomon's doing that here in Ecclesiastes. Keep in mind what the book's about. Solomon begins, vanity of vanity. You're probably familiar with that phrase. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity. All is chasing, striving after the wind. The moment that you think you've got a hold of it, gone. It just flies right out of your hand. As soon as you think you've got a hold of it, it's gone. He's saying that's what life's like. It's empty. It's vain. At least a life that is apart from God. And I think that's key for us to understand. Solomon's not taking a negative view of our walk here on this earth. But our life that is separated from God, if we're trying and striving to find gratification, happiness, whatever phrase you want to input there, if you're seeking for contentment apart from the Lord, you'll never find it, because the moment that you think you've got a hold of it, finally, it's gone. It's vain. It's empty. It's striving after the wind. Now, I want you to notice what he says in chapter 9. Begin reading with me, if you will, in verse 1. For I have taken all this to heart and explain it that righteous... For I have taken all this to my heart and explain it that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. It is the same for all. There is one fate for the righteous and for the wicked, for the good man, for the clean, and for the unclean, for the man who offers a sacrifice and for the one who does not offer a sacrifice. As for the good man, so is the sinner. As the sinner is, so is the one who is afraid to swear. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that there is one fate for all men. Furthermore, the heart of the sons of men are full of evil, and insanity is in their hearts throughout their lives. Afterwards, they go to the dead. For whoever is joined with the living, there is hope. Surely a live dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know they will die, but the dead do not know anything, nor have they any longer a reward, for their memory is forgotten. Indeed, their love, their hate, and their zeal have already perished, and they will no longer have a share in all that is done under the sun. Go then, verse 7. Eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which he has given you under the sun, for this is your reward in life and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun. Whatever your hands find to do, verily, do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, And the battle is not to the warriors. And neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor of men, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time. Like fish caught in a treacherous net and birds trapped in a snare, so the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. Again, it may appear to you, as we've read down through these verses, it may appear to you that Solomon is a rather glass half empty kind of fellow. He's a rather pessimistic kind of guy. But think carefully about what he has said. Three points I want to share with you tonight about these verses. If we want to title this lesson, maybe something, we might call it something like some life lessons. That's a real brilliant kind of title, but that's the one I've got on my little note sheet here. Some life lessons. Number one. Everyone shares the same fate. Look again at what he says here. Look again at the way he begins this. I've taken this to heart. I've explained it to righteous men, to wise men. Their deeds are in the hands of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. It is the same for all. What Solomon is saying here is this matter that anything can await us. We don't know what our life will be like. That is the same for you as it is for me. That's true of men, that's true of women, that's true of the young, that's true of the old, that's true of those that are living here in America, that's true of those that live in China, that's true of those that live in Ethiopia. It's the same for all. It's the same for the rich as it is for the poor. Anything can happen tomorrow. It's the same for the healthy and for the ill. It's the same for all. The same fate awaits us all. Now, when he says that, he's not making a point about our... He's not saying that the righteous and the sinners both go to the same place. That's not the point that he's making. He's not saying that the righteous and the wicked will both die and that's it. Or he's not making the point that the righteous and the wicked, it really doesn't matter which you are. God's just going to open the doors of heaven and welcome everybody in. That's not the point that he's making. Job, in one of his weaker moments, makes some accusations against God that sound very much like that, that it's all the same to the Lord, that he doesn't really care. He doesn't really take note whether you're righteous or you're wicked. Bad things happen to the righteous, bad things happen to the wicked. Good things happen to the righteous, good things happen to the wicked. Therefore, God really must not care whether you're righteous or wicked. In one of Job's weaker moments, he makes some accusations like that about the Lord. But that's not the point that Solomon is making here. The point that Solomon is addressing is that we're all going to die. And we know that, don't we? This isn't the only place that we find something like that. In the book of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, it says that it's appointed unto men once to die. We don't know when that's going to come, but we know that it is. Back in the book of Numbers, in Numbers chapter 16, verse 29, there's a comment made about the death that is common to all men. All these that we have read about throughout the Scriptures, from Adam to Noah to Abraham, David, even Peter and Paul, they have all died. So also with the wicked, they've all died. There is one fate for all. Look again at what he says here in verse 1. He says, "For I've taken all this to my heart and explain it, that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him." And you think back to your adolescent years, and when we begin making plans. My children, I've got twin daughters; they're 9, and my little boy is 6, and You know, they don't really make plans. They know that at some point they're going to go see Grandma and Pappy again, but they don't really make plans. Tomorrow, we're going to do probably the same thing we did today. We're going to play, and we'll probably have to do school, but if we can get out of it, we'll be happy to do that too. That's about all the further their plans go. But you know, you get a few more years on, and you come into your adolescent years, and you begin making some plans. I'm going to go to school here, and this is the course of study that I'm going to pursue, and this is the kind of work that I'm wanting to do, This is the man that I'm going to marry. This is the girl that I'm going to marry. You know, we're making all kinds of plans. Sometimes love struck girls, they're writing their name, their married name even down on their notebooks, and we've got plans. All these plans that we have, and yet what does Solomon say? We don't know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits us. We don't know. You think about your adolescence. You think about all those plans that you made back when. How have they come out? I don't say that to be negative. Most of the plans that I made turned out fairly well. But I'll tell you what. Some of the journey's been rather strange. That wasn't necessarily meant to be funny. It just sometimes. Have you ever noticed some people they just open their mouth and just dumb stuff falls out? Sometimes you open your mouth too much and just things start falling out. Look again at what he says here. Anything awaits us. We just don't know. There's one fate for all. We know that we're going to die. That's the only thing that we can be assured of. It's like what James says over in the book of James, in James chapter 4. You might be familiar with this as well. James tells us at the end of the chapter, he says, verse 13, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we shall go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business, make a profit. Yet you do not know whether your life will be like tomorrow. You're just like a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin." Now, when James talks about this, I do not believe that he is telling us that in order to be righteous, in order to be faithful to God, that whatever we plan to do, we need to say these specific words, "if the Lord wills." There's nothing wrong with saying that. But that's not the point that James is making. The problem here with the folks in James chapter 4 is they made no room for God. They made no room for God's alterations of their plans. This is my plan. This is the way it's going to go. James says, and Solomon would agree, you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You do not know whether it will be love or hate. Anything can come. There's one fate for all. We know that death awaits us. It's the end for all of us. Now, notice again that his point is not so much that what happens to the dead. Look a little bit further. It is the same for all. There is one fate for the righteous and for the wicked, for the good and for the clean, for the unclean, for the man who offers a sacrifice and for the one who does not sacrifice. As the good man is, so is the sinner. As the sinner, as the swearer is, so is the one who is afraid to swear. He goes on and he says, "Afterwards they go to the dead. For whoever is joined with all the living, there is hope. Surely a live dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know they will die, but the dead do not know anything." The dead do not know anything. Again, Solomon's point is not so much about where the dead are, what the dead are doing or not doing. And sometimes people use this passage, "the dead know nothing at all." And they make a point about this, something like soul sleeping, that when we die, we're just unconscious and we just don't know. We die and the next moment that we have any consciousness about us, the next thing that we know, Jesus has returned and we've been raised. Now, I'm not here to argue the point, but even if that were the case, I'm not suggesting that it is, but even if it were the case, that's not what this verse is teaching. The dead know nothing at all. That's not what Solomon's saying here. When Solomon writes these words, he's simply making the point that we all know that we're going to die. And when we die, all of our plans stop. All the good that we may enjoy in this world stops. All those things that we've been saving and preparing for, it all ends. And it's the same for the powerful and for the weak, for the good and for the bad. I might make one note with you, however, about this matter of what happens when we die. I want you to look with me, if you will, at the book of Luke in chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. This is somewhat of a side comment. Luke chapter 16, Jesus speaks about the rich man and Lazarus. And there's some question whether this is a historical fact, that these things occurred, or is this a parable? Well, oftentimes those that want to argue that it's a parable want to argue that it's a parable because they want to make the case then from passages like Ecclesiastes that once we die, that, you know, we just die and the next moment we have the Lord coming, that somehow our spirits are sleeping. And so the things that transpire here with Abraham and with Lazarus and with the rich man, that this is somehow just conjured up in Jesus' mind. It's interesting where Luke puts this. He flanks this account, this account of the rich man and Lazarus. He flanks it both before and afterwards with parables. And so contextually, it would be reasonable to conclude that this account of the rich man and Lazarus is a parable. Because before there's a parable and afterwards there's a parable. Not a very elaborate parable, but there is a parable. And so it's flanked on either side by parables. So it would be reasonable to conclude that it's just another of the parables that Luke's recording that Jesus told. I don't have a problem saying that. But even if it is a parable, every parable that Jesus tells, he describes realistic events. You think about the parable of the sower. Jesus does not make up some kind of futuristic, some kind of alien world in which crops grow, whereas we have no idea of crops' growth here. You understand what I'm describing? Jesus uses real life events, real life happenings in his parables. He talks about the parable of the lost sheep. Because people had sheep. Sheep are real things. And sometimes real sheep get really lost. And a real shepherd has to go out and find it. Jesus tells a parable about a lost coin. Money's a real thing. Money's a real thing. And if you lost money, if you lost the amount of money that this woman lost, you'd be really worried about that too. And you'd probably clean your house. You'd search all over, high and low, trying to find it. Jesus tells a parable about a lost boy. He's talking about real things. There are really parents in this world who have children, sometimes two boys. And sometimes one of those boys is lost. And the other is self-righteous. Those are real things. And so when Jesus speaks about the rich man and Lazarus, whether this is a parable or not, really is not the point. Jesus is dealing with real events. We know that we're going to die. Whether we're rich, we're poor, powerful or weak, good or bad, there's one fate for all. And so Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 9, if that's the case, then go enjoy your life. He doesn't quite use it this way, but he uses somewhat of an idea of eat, drink, and be merry. Go enjoy your life. Look again at what he says here, verse 7 of chapter 9. He says, go then, eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. What do you think about that phrase? God has already approved your works. Again, he's not telling us that go do whatever you want to because God says it's okay. That's not what he's suggesting. Paul, when he writes to the Romans, speaks about liberality and some things that we are even at liberty to do, we should not do. We should forego. Even the things that we have a right to do, we at times should forego that right. And so when Solomon writes here, he's not suggesting that we ought to just go and do whatever we want to do because God has already stamped his approval on it. He's just kind of given us a blank permission slip, filled out his name and said, go have fun. That's not what Solomon's saying here. Look again at the passage. For God has already approved. God has already approved your works. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which you have been given, which He has given to you under the sun. For this is your reward in life, and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun. Enjoy your life. Set out the good dishes. You understand what I'm talking about. Everybody has good dishes. You have good dishes, you have common dishes. At our house, we have McDonald's plates. These are plates that I got before Aaron and I were married. There was a girl that worked at McDonald's that I was friends with, and so whenever they had their McDonald's plates, she would let me know, and she'd set some aside for me, and I'd go and pick them up. McDonald's plates. And kids love these things. That's what we eat our lunch on. That's what you eat the bologna sandwich on. But now if we have company come over, we don't normally put out the McDonald's plate. Now, I generally show them around just because I just think they're neat. But generally, we don't eat on those. Aaron has special plates for that. You understand that, right? And we set those out at special times. Because if you set them out too often, then they're not special anymore. Right? Solomon's saying, what? Let your clothes be white all the time. Let not oil be lacking on your head. He's saying set out the good dishes. Enjoy those good things. It'll be 2 years come this August. My mother passed away. My mother sewed prairie dresses. My children, my girls at least, and their cousins were fascinated by the Little House on the Prairie books. And so my mom would sew prairie dresses for them. And when my mom passed away, some people suggested that they quit wearing those dresses because you're not going to get any more and you don't want to ruin them. My mother also, the year before she passed away at Christmas time, she had, I don't know how long it took her to do this, but she had crocheted an afghan for each of the grandchildren and then also one for like my wife and I and my sister and her husband. It was like 14 or... Afghans. I mean, this is a couple of years worth of work. She had crocheted all these. And I tell you, there's not generally a night that I don't sleep under that afghan that I have. And people would say, well, why don't you put that away? You know, you're going to ruin that. And you know what? It's kind of getting a little bit ratty. It's kind of falling apart. It's not going to last forever. But I'll tell you why not. Because if I put that away, I save that. I keep that special. I never use that. There's going to come a day that I'm going to pass away. And then my children are going to go through my belongings. They're going to look around, find all those things. And they're going to say, oh, this is the blanket that Grandma made. And they're going to take it and they're going to put it away. They're going to put it up for somewhere special. And if it survives that long, because anything can happen. If it survives, then their children someday are going to go through their things. And they're going to find that and they're going to say, who made this dirty old thing? And they're going to take it to Goodwill. And somebody's going to buy that. Somebody's going to buy that who has no thought for my mother and for all the work that she did. And they'll probably just turn that out for their dog to lay on. You know, someday my daughters are going to grow up and they're not going to be able to wear those dresses anymore. They're past, they're getting short on them and we've kind of hemmed and, you know, covered some of the thin areas. And someday they're going to outgrow those. And then they'll put them up. But they were made to be worn. That blanket was made to be kept warm by me. By my children, by those of us who know the significance of it. That's what Solomon's saying here. Put out the good dishes. Put on your good clothes. Fix your hair up. Enjoy the things you have. Because someday you're not going to have them. Enjoy what you have. Enjoy your life. Maybe the last point that he makes is someone might respond to all of this and say, but you know, life's just not fair. I can understand enjoying your life, but my life's just not enjoyable. I've just not had the luck. It's just not fair. Well, no, it's not fair. And Solomon says that. The race is not always to the swift. The battle's not always to the strong. Solomon agrees with you. Now, we do need to have some balance in our life. We need to work when it's time to work, and it's okay to play when it's time to play. And we ought to find some enjoyment in our work. That's certainly a good thing to do. You'll never work a day in your life if you enjoy what you're doing. You've probably heard that before, haven't you? But yeah, it's true. Life is not always fair. He goes on, he says in verse 11, he says, again, I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. That's true. Life is not always fair. Sometimes you get the raw end of the deal. Sometimes you are the swifter and you lose the race. Sometimes you are the stronger and you lose the battle anyway. Sometimes you are smarter, in fact, than everyone else in the room, and nobody appreciates that. Sometimes that's true. But sometimes, do you not also benefit by being the slower and winning anyway? Have you not at some times been the weaker and won in spite of it? Has there not been some time that you've been in a room with somebody smarter than you? And you were rewarded anyway. You know, sometimes when we read this passage, we look at what Solomon says here and we think, yeah, that's right, Solomon, that's right. That's right. I've been beat out time after time. I've been overlooked. I've not gotten what I deserve. That's true. Life is not fair. And I can give it example upon example upon example of how life has not been fair to me. But you know, sometimes life working, being not fair, works for our advantage. Sometimes we, in fact, are the slower. We are the weaker. We are the one that is not as wise. And yet, life benefits us from those things. Time and chance overtake us all. For good or for bad. And so again, what Solomon says, listen, we know that one day all this that we have about us, this is going to come to an end. And since that's the case, then we ought to enjoy while we're here the things that we have. Now, Peter would add to this, that since all these things are going to be dissolved in the way that he has described, when the Lord returns, when the archangel shouts, and the earth and its works, all the things that we have accumulated, all the things that we've saved and strived for, all those things are going to be no more. Since all these things are going to be destroyed in that way, what sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? What kind of person ought you to be? If you know that one day you're going to go and meet the Lord, and you're going to give an account of the things that you've done in this body, what kind of person ought you to be? Yes, enjoy your life. And while you're enjoying your life, enjoy it to the fullest by putting God first. Will you not do that tonight? Will you not repent of your sins? Confess Jesus as Lord? Will you not be baptized, immersed in water for the forgiveness of those sins? Would you not come up out of that watery grave that you might be faithful to Him thereafter, professing His name to friends and enemies alike? Will you not do that this evening? We'll help you in every way that we can if you'll come while we stand and sing.